Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 632, recorded Tuesday, October 16th, 2018. Something, something, Mac Mini. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by ZipRecruiter. Most job boards overwhelm you with tons of wrong resumes. That's not smart. ZipRecruiter finds the right people for you and actively invites them to apply. Now that's smart. Try it free at ZipRecruiter.com/MacBreak. And by FreshBooks, the ridiculously easy-to-use cloud accounting software that helps small business owners thrive. Try it free for 30 days at FreshBooks.com/MacBreak. And by LastPass, secure every password-protected entry point to your business. Join over 43,000 businesses and start managing and securing your company's passwords today. Learn more at LastPass.com/TWiT. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show where we talk about the latest news from Apple. And Renee Ritchie, I guess, is not here because there's new Pokemon in town. Lori Gill, though, I'm happy to say, is filling in. Hi, Lori.
Hi, how's it going?
It's great. Deputy Managing Editor over there at iMore.
Yes, that's me.
You've assumed the Serenity Caldwell write down everything they say on the analyst call duties.
That's right. Yeah. I cannot hold a candle to Serenity Caldwell, though. She was the expert at that. I remember times when her and I would just be sharing a hotel room and she would be up at 2 in the morning, clickety-clack, clickety-clack. She works hard.
That's not annoying. Hey, where is Renee? Is he really out and about doing Pokemon? I hope not.
It's not Pokemon. I'm actually not sure what he's traveling for. He said he's going to be gone today and tomorrow, but he didn't say why.
Pokemon. It's Pokemon.
Pokemon.
It's definitely It's great to have you, Lori. That's Andy Inoko from the beautiful WGBH in Boston, Boston Public Radio, and Inoko.com. Hello, Andrew.
Hello. Happy fall.
Is it cold and chilly now in the New England area?
We call it crisp.
Yeah,
it is the season where you'll be walking in downtown and find that people have found it necessary to tie like corn stalks around like the light poles.
I love that
because
I miss fall. That was my favorite season in Rhode Island. I just loved it.
It really is quite lovely. Also, the cafe that's like around the block for me has switched from its spring and summer menu, which is just lunch and dinner, to its fall and winter menu, which is now lunch and breakfast. So it means that I can once again get those wonderful pancakes without having to walk more than a couple of hundred.
Is that because they don't like to work in the dark?
No, it's because they have this beautiful like patio by the water. And so they can do. So there are a lot of people who will come by for dinner by the water with a rippling waves, and they can charge more money for water. Whereas in the fall, there are people who just want to be in, who are just ordering or buying coffee just to stay warm.
Nobody wants to stay outside. Yeah, I don't blame them. And from the nation's capital comes Alex Lindsay, Pixel Core.
Hello.
Hello, Alex. Oh, I like the flannel. That's nice. He's also dressed for winter.
You know, it's crisp. It was crisp. So it was cold. I flew in last night and I got up and I was like, it's really cold out there. So I dressed a little warmer.
I like fall. I do.
I love it. No, I love it being crisp. I get to dress in flannel.
So Lori, just out of curiosity, did you guys get an invitation to any Apple events that might be coming up over the next couple of weeks?
Not yet.
This is puzzling.
If an Apple event is going to happen, the invite will probably come
this week,
this Friday at the latest.
Yeah.
But they may not do an event. It could just be just a press announcement.
Right.
It could be that they're just not ready, so they're not even going to do anything at all. I mean, we haven't had a fall iPad event in a couple of years. The last two, I think, were in March. So, you know, there might not be anything else this fall at all. We'll see.
Wow. There'd be some people very upset.
Especially people who want to get their new iPads in by Christmas. Definitely.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, kind of holding off. I even promised, this was probably foolish. I promised somebody my old iPad 10.5-inch iPad Pro, assuming that I'd have a new 11-inch iPad Pro this year. Well, maybe not. Maybe we'll find out. If they're going to do it, they're going to do it in October. And that means we're, you know, tomorrow is 2 weeks from the end of the month. So they better hurry. Lately, yeah, it's been a 2 week notice, right? It hasn't been one. They have done 1 week notice in the past.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it could be as little as 1 week. Especially on an event like this for iPhone, I think you kind of expect that there's more notice because everyone knows it's coming. There's no way Apple wouldn't do an iPhone event, but a fall event that's not an Apple event. That could potentially be just a 1 week notice deal for sure. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And it depends on how extensive it is. If it's really, I find it hard. The rumors that we have in front of us about the changes to the iPads are big enough that it's harder to imagine them not having some sort of public event that they can live stream so they can walk everybody through what makes this different and why it might be worth $1,000 to people. But if there's nothing else really apart from that, there's just a parenthetical, oh, and by the way, speed bumps for the, there's a speed bump for the Mac Mini and there's a speed bump for the MacBook Pros, then it might be the sort of thing where we don't know exactly when the way we find out when the launch date is when suddenly an embargo date breaks and 10 people or 20 people who have been using iPad Pros for the past 10 days without our knowledge suddenly actually post their reviews.
I think they should. Yep. I think if it's a Mac Mini, there should be fireworks, a parade.
You'll do it yourself if there's a Mac Mini. You'll throw the parade.
Exactly.
Right? By the way, not only is there no Apple invitation yet, we're still doing white Starbucks cups. So I just want everybody, right? When the red cups come out, then you know the holiday season is upon us.
No, I can pinpoint it exactly. It is the time of season where there's row after row of bags of Halloween candy. But if you look like on the end cap, there are the Peanuts, Charles Schulz themed Christmas barrels of popcorn.
We're not there yet. We're almost there, though. Almost. Yeah.
You still have at least a week and a half to complain about pumpkin spice.
Lori, you're a Halloween fan?
Oh, such a big Halloween fan. It's my favorite time
of the year. What's your costume this year?
Me and a group of friends of mine are going as the characters from Metalocalypse.
Good choice.
I don't even know what that is. You're going to be one of those trick-or-treaters that I go, oh, that is a cute costume. What the hell are you? Yeah. Metalocalypse.
It was a cartoon that was based on death metal bands, or one death metal band, but it was really hilarious. And if you know anything about metal music, they actually did a really, really good job of kind of making fun of the genre and stereotyping the kinds of people that would be in bands like that. And there's even these great little Easter eggs in the background. Like, I think the grocery store that they visit is called Burzum, which is Burzum's grocery store, which is the name of a death metal band.
Oh, that's hysterical. Yeah, are you the guy with the mustache and the gap tooth, or which one are you?
The one actually that is the one with the longer hair with the little Fu Manchu style goatee that's,
on the right
that's
there.
Hanging down.
Yeah. Yes, that should be an interesting costume. The black t-shirt's easy, but the Fu Manchu mustache, that'll be a challenge.
Yeah, I'm just going to cut some of my hair and glue it to my face. It'll be easy.
At least it'll match. Andrew, do you get trick-or-treaters in your neck of the woods?
This will actually be my first year with trick-or-treaters because it's kind of, again, kind of a downtown-y area. There is sort of like a trick-or-treat night that should try to bring people in and like buy booze and stuff like that. I may or may not be home for it, though, which is a bummer because I enjoy being the person who gets the deep – I really, really like when people like Lori like go for like the deep catalog reference – where it's like where everybody's saying, oh, look, isn't that an adorable elf? And I'm the one that said, oh, awesome Link costume. and the look in these kids' eyes, like, finally, somebody who knows that TV show or somebody who actually plays video games who understands that this is
you're going to get a bunch of people saying, are you Steve Tyler? They're not going to know who the hell you are. So that's the fun of it, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Actually, the group of people I hang out with all know who Metalocalypse is, so they'll get that joke.
Of course they do. And Alex, you're not probably dressing up, but I bet you the kids will be.
Yes. Yes, the kids are. I think Malachi's talking about being V for Vendetta. And I was like,
oh, nice. I have the mask. You know, he wants to borrow it.
I was like, you know, that's really like something that's used by Anonymous. And he goes, yep.
Oh, my God. Your like, kid is
and I
hip.
Was like, there's my son. There's my son.
That's
so,
my son.
So anyway, so he's going there. And then we're doing a little Arduino project with Isabella's. So
here's my I shouldn't telegraph stuff. This, but here's my costume. it's all ordered and ready. It does involve a fan in the butt, and unfortunately those hands you can't hold or touch anything because they're sealed, so basically they'll be trapped inside an inflatable Pikachu.
See, that's
but it's comfortable.
Yeah, you'll be sweating
until you're trying to sit down.
No, I won't be sweating. It's inflated.
Exactly. I'm saying you won't be. Yeah. That way you won't be sweating.
It's built in air conditioning. Yeah.
I will say that there's one Comic-Con like in New England remaining for the season, and I might break out a project I've been working on for the past two or three years. It is a deep catalog costume. It's not It's assembled out of things that are that are off the shelf items, but you have to find the exact right off the shelf items. So it depends.
You're not going to go as Tin Foil Man again.
No. I mean, people. I know that at New York Comic Con a couple years ago, I went as Bill Cunningham, and nobody got it.
Wow.
This way, you'll have to be of a certain age to get it. I think those people if they get it are going to be very, very pleased. But
I was really aggressive about doing Halloween until I was working at Lucasfilm and ILM competing with guys in the model shop were fun at all. Like someone came, someone came, you know, Toy Story, you know, the little, you know, the claw, you know, that, you know, it, but yeah, they came as the entire apparatus and one of them was hanging from the claw.
Funny.
You know, moving around, you know, and it would be, it was like a lot of that. And so you either played really hard or you just didn't play. I just came as a Scotsman. I have a kilt. So I would as a Scotsman every year. Kilt.
Maybe somebody will come as the 2018 iPad Pro design. These renders give you some idea. Perhaps they were shared on Twitter based on leaks from Ben Geskin. This is according to the leak. This will be a 5.86 millimeter thick iPad. Hopefully
with a flexible screen. I'm afraid.
Yeah, no kidding. That's a lot,
gonna bend.
Lot thinner.
Well, I mean, you're not going to try to put that in your back pocket, are you?
I hope not.
Well, no, but I keep a lot of stuff in my bag. And, you know, my current one is already thin enough where I worry a little bit about where it's being supported in my backpack because I'm afraid it's going to get pushed up against something. Getting much thinner would make me...
Yeah.
More stressed.
Square corners, kind of iPhone 4 style squared corners on this thing, according to the leak.
I really like that look. I hope they do that. I love that on the 4-inch phone, but iPhone SE looks the same. I love that squared corner thing. Yeah. I wish we would go back to it.
I'm just curious. And I just don't know how. I can't wait to get my hands on it to see how I adjust to having so little bezel to deal with on a device that's where you really can't just like sort of cradle it in your hand like a phone. You really do have to, if you don't have it on an easel, you are really gripping it in some way, shape, or form. And I know they do a lot of there's a lot of algorithms in there to make sure that to tell the difference between this is an incidental touch on the edge of the screen versus no, this was a
that's going to be the challenge,
touch.
Yeah.
But I hope that this is a practical choice as opposed to a stylistic choice, because I think that there might be some circumstances which you'd like to have a little bit of out of play space that you can hold things and you can grip things. You can have your case kind of like grab it by the sides.
I don't think you're alone in that fear. But on the other hand, I think that what's driving it is not merely style and fashion, but the fact that people have the expectation. Like customers don't want bezels anymore. I see a bezel and I go, oh boy, yuck.
Well, also it's amazing to have a device that's pretty much the same size as the one you got 2 or 3 years ago, but the screen is magically this much bigger, so you don't have to get a bigger bag. You don't have to adapt that way. So that's definitely a win for sure.
Yeah.
I think the Apple Watch Series 4 is a perfect example of that. It actually doesn't really look much bigger on your wrist, but the screen real estate makes it look enormous to look at. And I think the iPad would give that kind of vibe too if it lost all its bezel. But I completely agree. I'm constantly accidentally touching my iPhone XS and just kind of moving it or opening something that I didn't intend to. And that's with the ability to grip around the edges of it. So an iPad that you would hold with both of your hands, how do you not grip or touch something or trigger something on accident if there's zero bezel? You might open an app that just happens to be off the edge or something like that.
There might be a brisk market for cases that give you a little more to hold on the edge, right?
A little handle on the side.
Yeah. Or, I know, pop sockets for iPad-sized pop sockets. There you go.
Yes.
What I don't know yet, based on, anyway, these renders, which are based on the leaks, is where the Face ID camera will be. There's obviously no fingerprint reader, no home button.
I think the rumors that we're hearing is that it will be in the
on the side.
What you might call the top, not the side, but
what you would call the top. Okay.
But it would be, it would also support landscape, whereas the iPhone 10 and up, you actually have to be holding it upright to use Face ID. The rumor is that on the iPad, even though it's going to be at the top of portrait, you can still hold the iPad in landscape.
When you say at the top, you mean at the side. Who uses iPad in portrait mode?
If this were an iPad, it would be, you know, up there at the top.
Nobody uses the iPad in portrait mode, though, right?
Comic books, comic book readers.
I do it to read magazines.
So rarely. Where's my iPad? What did you guys do with my iPad? Anyway, I just wanted. So you're saying it'll be, Lori, on the short side, one of the short sides.
On the short side,
that's the rumor.
And
it will work. All rumor. And then that's the question: is have they figured out a way to get Face ID to work? Now I have to say, again, these are renders, so I don't understand what they're thinking. Oh, here's my iPad. I don't understand what they're thinking in terms of where there's camera room for a Face ID. Wouldn't it be bad if you had to turn the thing around, say, okay, unlock it, and then turn it the other way? That'd be challenging.
Yeah, that would be really bad.
No, I don't think they'd even include it if you had to do that.
So this is kind of, Apple's already solved this, right? Because they're presumably making them. Maybe not.
I think they may not.
I think they're really well motivated to do that. Not really for style purposes, but really the user interface of iOS is moving away from having a physical home button. So I think just getting that home button off the screen is a really, really big deal for them, because it's not just style, but they're trying to teach a new vocabulary, everything, saying there is no, you do not touch the basic instructions are not touch the home button to get to back to the launcher. It's swipe up from the bottom or swipe down from a corner. So they want to make that consistent. And part of that involves getting rid of Touch ID. So now you have to find another solution for that. So I think that they're super well motivated to do this.
You know, it's funny, Lori, that you refer to the larger screen on the Series 4. Apple did such a good job of concealing the bezels on earlier versions of the Apple Watch that it's not immediately obvious that that screen is bigger. The only place you really see it is when you enter the passcode, and those buttons are so much bigger.
Well, I mean, the interface itself entirely is bigger.
For me,
like just the text itself is larger.
Did you get the 44?
No, the 40.
Okay, so did you move from a 38 to a 40?
Correct, yeah.
See, I'm on the 44, which is obviously even bigger.
Even bigger, yeah.
It does feel more usable, but again, we didn't see the bezels because the whole thing was just kind of this black blob. So we
looked bezel-less, even though it wasn't.
They fooled everybody.
Yeah.
Laura, did you just invent a really wonderful word, bezel-less, bezel-less? If not, you should claim credit for that. That is a wonderful
bezelous
word.
Bezelous. It's bezelous.
Patent pending.
Is that one of the bands of Metalopolis? Metalopocalypse. Wow.
Another thing that it feels like people have kind of forgotten about is the iPhone XR, which is coming out this month too, right?
Yeah, the pre-orders go up on Friday.
Yeah.
Thursday night, midnight, Friday morning, midnight, depending on how you put it.
And apparently Apple is opening its new London store Friday, October 26th to coincide with, look at this, it's very pretty in Covent Garden, to coincide with.
Have you been to that one?
I have not.
It's beautiful. I mean, I've been in it a couple of times, and it's you just walk in, and you're like, holy smokes, you know. And this, I think this is one of the first ones that I went into. Maybe the one in Paris is also feels that way, but this one just had this very classic look. Before this was before the one that was in the train station, you know, in New
this
York.
This is where the only connection I have to this is where. The flower girl was selling flowers in My Fair Lady. It's the only connection I know to this, right? That's where
mine was Liza Doolittle was. I was desperately looking for an Ethernet to lightning connection.
There, well, so. Same thing, right? Yeah. So these are Apple the beautiful.
Go ahead. Apple deserves credit for this sort of thing. There's so many like places around the world where there were public spaces that were in danger of being turned into like a private business or a private building that are being cared for, they're being loved, they're being renovated, and they are still on some level a public space, because if you're, unless you actually pitch a tent and they have your mail delivered, you're welcome to come into an Apple store no matter who you are. So, and it's I realize that they're looking for great pieces of real estate that will show off everything to their greatest advantage, but nonetheless there are all these spaces that could have been some foo-foo place where there are people at the door to keep out riffraff like me. But it's still a very beautiful place where people can go. So I'm glad that they're doing this sort of stuff.
Will anybody be buying a iPhone XR? I know. I guess I will, just so we can show it.
I still don't know what to tell people. That I really keep, for now, I've been telling people that hold off for the 10R, because all the stuff, most of the really, really cool stuff that you're going to get with a cheaper device. And my philosophy has always been that if you can get a cheaper model but max out the storage versus getting a better model that has less storage to deal with, I'd much rather have the additional storage, particularly when you have a camera that shoots really good 4K. So it's the same CPU. You don't get dual cameras on as the main camera, but you get one, and Apple knows how to leverage that really, really well. But it's the same wide camera that you get on the more expensive model. You get cheaper materials, but aluminum works just great instead of surgical stainless steel. You get an LCD display instead of OLED. But Apple made great OLED, LCD displays up until the iPhone X. So I don't think that the XS is a bad phone, but I really think a lot of people are going to have to think hard about where they want to spend that extra $250.
I agree 100%. I think this is going to be the iPhone of the year is the XR. This is a picture from Apple's store site, by the way, as Lori mentioned. You can pre-order on the 19th, this Friday, and delivery will be a week later on the 26th. The screen is the same size, maybe even actually it's a little bigger than the iPhone 8 Plus in a smaller phone. Yeah. So I think that's pretty spectacular. That really delivers. Even with the notch, it's a taller screen.
And those colors.
Yeah, they're really selling the LCD. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, no, also the colors of the colors of the phone themselves.
Yes.
Lori reminded me.
I want the red. I want the red. That's beautiful.
I want the banana phone.
You want the yellow?
I've always been the kind of person who says I hate the color yellow, but for some reason on the phone, on the iPhone X, 10R, you guys have got me saying X now.
it is banana, isn't it?
I think it's a really good color.
It's pretty banana.
I like it.
So the color choices are white, black. Who would buy white or black when you could choose kind of a light blue, a yellow that is a, you know, yellow submarine yellow. Coral, they call it, which is a kind of, it's not pink. It's not red. It's a little more orange red. And then I love the product red stuff. That is a nice, vibrant red. That would be a beautiful phone. And are these glass back? What is the material on this? Do we know?
I don't know. I don't think those are glass black.
These are metal backs?
I believe that's correct,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so no wireless charging if they're metal
backs. No, exactly. Yeah. I'm pretty sure that that's that I'm.
So you're going to get the banana phone? Are you going to really get the banana phone? Here's pricing. Well,
frankly, my heart is still breaking for the fact that they got rid of the SE. So you know.
Yeah, this is a great choice for people who would buy the SE or an older phone.
Well, not really though. We're not buying those of us who love
it's the still SE, big.
We don't love it because of the price. We love it because of the size. And the XR is actually larger than the XS.
Yeah.
So that's actually why I chose the XR the XS. When I decided which one I was going to pick was the width of the XS is more compatible with the size of my hands.
Helpless Corgi in our chat room saying they are glass backs and they do have wireless charging.
Oh, they are glass backs?
Yeah. That's what the chat room's telling me.
Yeah.
So I'll look at the specs.
I might be wrong on that.
It is the
with Lori. It's like I kept. It's like there are things I need to. We're trained to write, which means that we can actually double check and make sure we've got things correct.
Yeah, I'm putting you on the spot. Yeah,
I know, and it's one of those things where if you ask me about the XS or the XS Max, I probably know all the spec details of that. But because the XR hasn't come out yet, I haven't memorized all those details. So I apologize for that.
Well, and I'm looking at the spec sheet, and it's still not obvious.
Yeah. So. Yeah, it comes back that wireless charging is another feature that you don't lose by saving $250 or spending that money on 128 or 256 gigs of storage.
Right.
So I'm really recommending that people go to the Apple store, look at both of them side by side, or actually better yet, look at the XR first, spend like a half hour with it, and then go to the XS, see if you notice huge differences that you can't live with, can't live without. Otherwise, again, I think you're gonna love having an extra 64 or 128 gigs of storage versus having an OLED screen or and a second telephoto lens.
So the pricing is for a 64 gig model, it's $750, and
that most people are going though, the question is really how much is it per month.
Ah, well, that's true. And by the way, Apple really highlights that $37.41 a month for 64 gigs, $39.50 or $800 for 128 gigs, and $43.66 a month or $900 for 256. So, yeah, it's roughly, I don't know. What did I pay?
I think it's about a $20 difference per month.
Yeah. But it's a significant, it's not even $20. Oh, from the other phone. I got it. Yeah.
From the Max phone. Yeah. It's somewhere between $15 and $20 per month difference.
Yeah, that's a big difference for people. Yeah. And I think this, you make no sacrifices with this phone unless you're dead set on dual lenses or OLED.
Yeah.
Let's look at the, 54, the iPhone XS Max starts at $54 a month. So it is, it's a significant difference. And you can't get banana.
You can't get banana.
You can't get banana.
You'll be stuck with gold. You'll be stuck with gold instead of banana.
Dumb old gold.
Basically, $250 $250 more. I think the XR is going to be the killer of the family, but we'll see.
Yeah. Isn't it great? This is not the sort of thing we kind of associate with Apple. We might have expected them to say, "Well, we're going to reserve the iPhone X, the 3D Face ID camera, the edge-to-edge display, all these features. We're going to reserve that for the $1,000 price point, but we're going to continue to make really fine phones at our old price point that will always have a modern processor and be able to take advantage of modern features." They made it a $1,000 phone last year, but now they really made it. This is now the default phone. They were able to get that price down, not as low as what an iPhone 9 hypothetically would have been, but still, that's. I'm glad to see Apple being able to say, "Let's figure out a way to bring these really exclusive features down into the mainstream."
Well, but you can also see they have persuaded us now that an $800 phone is the bargain phone, so they've very carefully moved that ASP up.
$749, thank you very much.
$749, yeah, there we go.
Ming-Chi Kuo, our Chinese Apple analyst, says that sales of the four major Chinese brands were down during Golden Week, which is a big buying week, by 10% year over year. And he says that bodes well for the iPhone XR. Here's an opportunity. Maybe people aren't buying, expecting to get to the the 10R. Or it could be, well, trade war issues. I'm not sure. So that may be a bellwether, too, that there's interest in the Chinese market as well. Let's take a little break. When we come back, there's lots more to talk about. Lori Gill is here from iMore. She is deputy managing editor. And when Renee is out of town, she takes over for him here as well as there. Do you not know where he is, or do you know where he is, but you're not allowed to say?
No, I am not just saying that. I actually don't know where he is. I think he's in New York, but
I'm pretty sure. If Renee's not on the show, he's in New York getting briefed on new iPads or maybe the 10R. But the fact that Renee is not here always, to me, tells me there's new Apple products in the pipeline. I don't know why.
I like it when he's not here because that means I get to be here.
Yes. Don't yes. tell him, but we like it too. We always love having Lori on.
I'm always trying to send him away on some kind of business.
Go to work. Go to work, won't you? Andy Inoko is here, as always. He doesn't have anything to do. WGBH Boston, Inoko.com.
I prefer to say that my highest priority is my responsibility to the many, many listeners of this show.
Yeah, I'm usually here too, Randy. So, and Alex Lindsay of the Pixel Corps, who is today in Washington, D.C., on business.
Yep.
Unspecified.
So that beautiful view in the background is not just a facade. That's the actual backdrop of your where you're at right now.
It is a facade, but it's
it's exactly what it looks like.
But it's right. It's nearby. You can call
Alex. See, this is the world that Alex lives in. He could just simply open a window behind him, but he doesn't like the tonal contrast
exactly.
in the actual Capitol building. Exactly. He'd much rather have control over the lighting and the shading.
Why don't we just take a picture? We have done ones where we took the video camera and we stuck it like slightly at a different angle, you know, outside, and kind of turned it. And then put it in the monitor behind it because, you know, the frame of the Swiss mountains were better from there. And we didn't want to, the frame behind our thing was just other office buildings.
So anyways, real mountains. What?
Yeah, we offset it by like 4 feet.
By the way, speaking of that, Andy, I did go out and get a Aurora from Skylum folks based on your recommendation last week. And then went back through all my pictures from my trip and redid them all because you're absolutely right. It just is wonderful.
It's just the coolest thing.
Yeah.
I'm rehanging without getting into a huge, huge rat hole. I've been rehanging like old family pictures that I took down from the last move, and I'm taking them up. Oh, geez. Well, that one was. I did that in Photoshop circa like 2003, and plus the colors have faded a little bit. Even just without having the negative, if I just put that picture in a scanner. Not just fixing the color that had faded, but I can now do so much better. There's a picture of the one time I managed to get the entire extended family together in front of mom and dad's house, like as a huge, huge group. And I was so concerned about getting everyone positioned right and getting the lighting right, and getting the flash right. I forgot to ask my dad to close the front door behind him.
Oh.
So you can see like, and so I finally like added I finally closed the front door in Photoshop. The one thing that annoys me about that picture, I can't recommend highly enough. Every now and then when you get a brand new tool, go back into your old favorite photos and you'll be amazed at how much better your 1999 Sony your Nikon Coolpix camera can be after running it through modern apps.
I'll give you actually an example. If I can go back far enough in time, there was a picture I took in Barcelona that I love the composition of, but it didn't come out as I had seen it, you know, as I was there. Yeah. And I went back, let me skim way back here because this was at the beginning. Actually, you know what? If I search for Barcelona, I could probably find it faster. Google Photos very good in that. Yeah. So I'll show you the original. Actually, it's this or something like this. Yeah, I think that's the original. And then I'll show you. So I'm gonna run it through Aurora, and let's see. Let's find that in Aurora, and it saved the picture as far as I'm concerned. It made it a very interesting image. So. Let me do that again. That's before, that's after.
Oh, wow.
that's not subtle.
Yeah. Well, it's a lot of HDR, and I think...
I mean, I'm saying the improvement is...
Well, this was unusable. Subtle. It was just, you know, too dark to really use it. It was one of these. And, you know, it's my fault for not a great exposure, but it was also, you know, it was a difficult day. You see the light in the background. Mm. It was really fooling it. And didn't fool Aurora. Yep. I like the grain it added in the clouds too. Actually,
I love the you got streams of heavenly light bursting in through.
That's very. They were there, but you just could barely see them. That's all.
It's so liberating in photography when you realize that your job is not to present an image as it was when you took the picture. Right. Your greatest value is when you present something the way that you remember it
looked.
It being.
Yes. And so I was very happy to be able to recover my pictures, basically. So thank you for a great recommendation. We're going to get Scott Bourne, who is now on their board. He's a longtime member of the MacBreak family. He's now on their advisory board, and of course, he's a great photographer, and he's done some wonderful things. We're getting him in December.
I'm seeing him next week.
Not sure why he'll be here in December, but there'll be a reason, I'm sure. we'll be talking more about that. I'm really, really a fan of their stuff. Hey, let's take a little break. Come back with more of our guests. Also, I mentioned all three of you. All of you.
Yes.
You're great. Our show today brought to you by Zip Recruiter. If you're doing some hiring, you know, and if you're in the small business like ours, or if you're a sole proprietor, hiring is a big deal because it's like you're down a person. It's like a hockey team with a couple of people in the penalty box. You're down a few people and you're busy. You're doing a lot more because of it. And still you have to find a replacement. That happened to us actually a few months ago. Our bookkeeper announced she was leaving. She gave us a couple weeks notice, and then Lisa's is frantic because that means she's going to have to pick up the slack and do all the bookkeeping, and she's got to find a replacement. And it was at breakfast, we're sitting over the table. I said, well, this is a perfect time to try ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter is fantastic because, A, it posts your job listing everywhere to about more than 100 job sites with just one click of the mouse. And the beauty of that is you're going to reach out to as many people as possible. But B, they do something remarkable. They actually find people for you and invite them to apply for your job. They're using some powerful matching technology to scan all the resumes they have on file, which is many hundreds of thousands, identifies the people with the right skills, education, experience, and then invites them to apply, which means you get qualified candidates fast. We talked about it at breakfast. Lisa put it up on ZipRecruiter. Before lunch, we had three candidates, and as each one came in from ZipRecruiter, she said, wow, this is good. Oh, wow, this is really good. Wow, this person's perfect. It was really remarkable. Within a few hours, you don't have to wait for the right candidate to apply to your job. ZipRecruiter is smart. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/MacBreak to hire the right person. Of course, all those resumes, all those applicants, they don't call you. They don't send you email. It all goes into the ZipRecruiter interface. They reformat the resumes so they're easy and fast to read. You can have questions to screen out people who don't fit. You can rank them real fast. You can eliminate people you don't want and find the right person fast. It's number one among employers in the United States, according to Trustpilot, over 1,000 reviews. Number one. Really impressive stuff. And right now you can do it for free, so why not? Try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/MacBreak. If you use that address, they know you heard it here, and we like that. ZipRecruiter.com/MacBreak. We hired a great bookkeeper fast, and we thank ZipRecruiter not only for that, but also for their support. ZipRecruiter.com/MacBreak. Yeah, it had a very happy ending. Phil Schiller, speaking of photography, was a surprise visitor at Adobe Max yesterday. And lo and behold, what did he preview? A full version of Photoshop on the iPad. It'll be coming next year. Schiller said, it's not watered down. It is Photoshop with all the assets and tools you need to create the same projects you can do on the desktop, but you're doing it on the iPad.
I'm curious about that. I mean, I saw the announcement. There's part of me is like, really? Everything?
Well, doesn't Affinity Photo do much of what Photoshop does?
It does, but I think that what has me go back to Photoshop is that it's always missing like little details that you use in Photoshop that are very obscure. Certain selection tools or channel operations that I think are there. I think Affinity Photos, and I use Affinity Photos specifically for 360 editing. You can put it into a 3D space,
right,
and rotate it up and paint out your tripod if you're taking 360 photos or video, and so it's the best thing for that. So I use Affinity Photo, but I don't find myself, and I had the same problem with Pixelmator, is that I've been using Photoshop since 1991. So it's really hard for me to transition to the new apps, which are now not that new. But I look at it when they say that it's everything. I'm just like, I just have a hard time believing that everything went in. I feel like there's little marketing there. I mean,
I think you're right, because they say feature complete. they specifically don't say feature complete. So
they say everything you need, and I'm like, okay, all right. Yeah, I'm sure that it's going to be great, and I think that for folks like me that want to do stuff in Photoshop, but still, you know, want to do it on our iPad, but can't quite. I think that there is a big market for it, and I think it's a great idea for Adobe. I just think that when they say it's the full version, I was like, maybe.
Well, I think maybe they mean full file compatibility, including layers, including macros, including that sort of stuff. It's you realize that when they make promises to the Photoshop community, these are people who are making lots of money with Photoshop. These aren't just like people like me who occasionally want to like take a leaf off of someone's face. So if they make promises they can't deliver, oh my God, they'll be so horrible. But the big deal is just the ability to take a project you've been working on the desktop, take it with you on the iPad, or get started with something on the train home from a photo shoot or whatever, and then not have to import it, not have to translate the skills you've been developing in Photoshop for the past 10 years and say, what does it mean in Procreate to have a layer, or how does this brush tool work in Procreate? Right. So.
There were other announcements that Mac users and iPad users will be interested in Adobe Max. They did release Premiere Rush, Creative Cloud Video Editor, much simplified version of Premiere, which does run on the iPad, but Rush is intended to be completely cross-platform on iOS, on Android, and even on Chrome OS as a Chrome plugin. And so that's very intriguing. I mean, you wouldn't abandon Premiere. But Rush is Premiere compatible and more powerful than Premiere Clip or Premiere Elements. So, according to Adobe, so that's interesting. I immediately installed it on my iPad. I've been playing with it a little bit on Chrome OS, and I thought that was pretty impressive. Premiere Rush is $9.99 a month, unless you have an all apps plan.
Yeah. Everyone was really, including myself, was kind of concerned when they went from a buy it and own it model to a subscription only model. But I got to say that they really have delivered. They continue to add features that maybe I wouldn't have been willing to spend an extra $50 for, or an extra $80 or $90 for. Their mobile arm of this the Creative Suite is just gobsmackingly good. For you consider how well Adobe Lightroom works on a Chromebook, essentially on a web browser, and yes they're taking kind of the easy way around it, because they're not making a real Mac native app. It is the Adobe Photoshop interface that's been translated here and there. But for one manageable fee per month to get access to this entire library of apps, and also all of these great little features that keep popping up. And anytime I want to do something really fancy in Photoshop, I kind of have to train myself to do a web search I want to make someone who's looking to the left look like they're looking upwards, before I'm about to do 2 hours for the work, find out that there is a new feature that pushed out 3 weeks ago that's all about eyeball adjustment. Just highlight the eyes and then pull them to where you want this person to be looking at, and you're gone. That's not an actual feature, but I'm sure that's something they're working on. But that's what I'm talking about. They keep justifying the amount of money I give them by giving me features that make really barbariously difficult things really easy.
I am, however, anxious to see what Skylum does with their DAM, their digital asset management, because Luminar, which is awfully good, and we were just talking about Aurora, and if they do something that can, right now, you know what Elisa does? She uses Luminar and Aurora. And she just uses Apple Photos as her asset management tool, keeping track of everything. It exports fluidly, and it really works quite well. So it's not a bad choice. Lightroom is being updated somewhat. Apple Photos migration tool, if you want to move out of Photos into Lightroom. A new Sensei-powered people view, improved search, and new sharing options. And then Adobe's a design tool, XD, which I don't use, so I'm not familiar with. That's fairly new, and they're going to add voice capabilities this fall to XD. I don't even – apparently you can use Amazon Echo with the interface, you know, zoom in, enhance. I don't know. I don't know what the commands will be. Photoshop for iPad and something called Project Gemini, which is complementary to Photoshop. That'll be coming in 2019. The early stage project, according to 9to5 Mac, aims to offer a consistent drawing and painting surface across experience across all surfaces. So no matter what you're using, Project Gemini, Gemini the Twins, sounds like they want to somehow, I don't know, twin their applications in all on all platforms. Closed pre-release on iOS is available now for professional illustrators. So a lot of announcements at the Adobe event.
The most fun part of that show is always when they just do this magic show where they say, here are things that we're working on. Yeah, we don't have any timetable for releasing these, but here is that it's going to be something that I think that's when they introduced Content Aware Phil, the ability just to simply say, here is my brother-in-law who my sister fortunately just divorced, and I want him gone from this picture from the family cookout. And you circle the brother-in-law and you say Content Aware Phil, and suddenly either it's almost matchless, or it's basically takes 5 seconds worth of tweaking to finish it up. And that's the sort of stuff they show off. Things they don't have, they have enough for a really great demo, but not enough for a release yet. And it's usually at that wonderful intersection between really, really cool, really, really useful, and really, really creepy.
The Gemini will be interesting because it's iPad first. So, you know, their focus. So, and I guess it's a drawing app. They say designed to simplify drawing and painting workflows with a simple cross-device support, combining the raster imaging of Photoshop with the vector imaging of Adobe Illustrator and dynamic brushes into a single experience, ideal for drawing and content.
Yeah,
that's an ambitious project.
Yeah. Wouldn't it be wonderful if one of the things that they're working on, either for this app or for just Photoshop in general, is to extend continuity to Photoshop between an iPad Pro and a MacBook or any other desktop map, to say, oh, I see that you're actually 2 feet away from a Mac that's also running Photoshop. Would you like to use this beautiful $99 Apple Pencil and this beautiful $900 iPad as a graphics tablet so you can edit directly? So you'll be running Photoshop on the Mac, but you'll be essentially using this as a Wacom tablet. Boy, would that be an exciting move for people who like me who have both.
I know. I mean, most of the designers that I know now that are really serious about it are using their 13-inch, you know, iPad, you know, to iPad Pro as their Wacom tablet, you know, connecting it via Lightning, you know, to the computer, and the latency is low enough that they have been fine with it.
That's interesting. So people aren't buying Wacom tablets anymore; they just use iPads.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. It's they definitely like the performance better than the Wacom tablet. So it's, you know, most people that I know have kind of switched over to that process. You know, they find the performance of the, and I think the Pencil works better than the I have Wacom tablets right in front of me for something else, and so I use the Wacom tablet a lot, or even a couple of them at a time, and but I use them because I can mechanically drive the HDMI input. Like, it's not the performance on the iPad now is pretty good. I have found that those to be a little wonky. You know, I never get the kind of performance on my iPad, but I think that if you tune the system and you do a little tweaking, you can get it to work well. And I definitely know a lot of designers that have been using their iPad 13 Pro as the other screen, you know, for their Mac.
Apple apologizing. A small number of user accounts in China have been hacked via phishing attacks. Apple said, "We are deeply apologetic about the inconvenience caused to our customers by these phishing scams. However, two-factor authentication might have prevented these attacks from taking place at all. If you had an Alipay account linked to the iCloud account, funds were drained from the Alipay through fraudulent App Store purchases and subscriptions. And they notify you at unusual times of day, so you wouldn't notice. Some users said they lost hundreds of dollars through this hack. I wonder if this has anything to do with the fact that Apple's moved its iCloud storage to China. Probably not, right?
I think that was just an unfortunate. Hackers are hackers. They're gonna attack wherever they can. And Alipay is like the most, largest.
Right.
I can't even remember what the.
It's associated with Alibaba. But I wonder, the other one is WeChat. So I don't know if it's related to WeChat or not. Anyway, just a point of interest. Apple is apparently patenting some technology that is similar to technology Google announced in its Pixel 3 phones, and that will be coming, I think, to a lot of Oreo users. A way to fend off spam callers. This is becoming more and more of a problem. One analyst said that next year, half of all cell phone calls will be robocalls and spam calls. Apple has a patent that would automatically recognize a fake call and warn you accordingly. Google apparently does this and has a button on the Pixel 3 that says, send that call to voicemail, or ask that caller to identify themselves before I pick up, which would be very handy. And that is on phone. That is not done on network.
Yeah,
I think a lot of this stuff's going to start closing up. I mean,
it's become such a bane, hasn't it?
Well, and the problem is that they got so good at it. The issue is that when you ignore all those spam calls, it's better for the system, because you have a computer that's just basically casting across many, many, many different phones at the same time. And it's just reaching out with IP connections, VoIP connections. It's going out and, only coming back to a human when someone picks up the actual phone. So whether you ignore it or not, it actually makes it easier for them to figure out who might actually be someone that's interested in talking for a little while. And so the system has gotten so efficient that it just makes sense. It's like a Nigerian scam. I mean, you just call enough people, or you get across enough people, you're going to end up with someone to pull on.
I wish they would learn that I don't pick up and stop calling me.
The best way to do it is when I used to be a freelancer, a lot of times I would have a lot of fun with folks when I had time. And my thing was also to see how long I could keep a spammer on the phone, because that's really what makes the system inefficient is when you stay on. So my record is 37 minutes.
Oh man.
And the key is when you get the call and you go, hey, how's it going? And you go, oh, that sounds really good. I mean, I think I might need one of these. Oh, wait. Can you wait just a second? I got another call.
Yeah.
And then you come back. Oh, sorry. Sorry, man.
Oh, yeah.
And you get them all excited again. And then you start listening. You're like, yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. I got another call. And then you jump off again. And you just see how long you can do it. And for a long time, I could only get 15 or 20 minutes out of people. But then after a while, you get good at it.
Sorry, man. I got lousy credit. Could I give you like a bank wire transfer? If I give you like my routing number for my account.
The key is that it's got to be an easy, great sale. The key to doing this is it's an easy, great sale. You've got perfect credit. You can't wait to do it. And you just keep on having people call you. And you have to, put them on call waiting for just a second. And then you put them on hold. And you put the phone down for a while and you go back to work. And then you can pick it up again. And
I have to. I got to say, I hate telemarketers and robocallers with a passion. However, you know that when you're talking to that real life person, you're talking to Willie Loman. It's hard for me to feel good about.
I do the same thing. I have the same.
I'd much rather just like not answer the phone. But it shows you. Normally, my response partly is to this is that why don't we have laws that the carriers have to follow in order to stop these things from happening? But I don't know what kind of law we could put into place that they could actually enforce. It's so difficult. So we're gonna need better technology. I love the Google's approach, which is first on the Pixel, and it's going to be going out Pixel 3, and they're going to roll it out to other models of Pixel phones, and maybe just to Android in general, is just simply, it's brilliant, where it's not just, it lets you do call screening by doing voice to text. It will just fill the little alert with not just here's the phone number that's calling, but here's what they're saying right now. So you can just figure out that, okay, if it says, if it is my aunt,
I'm definitely picking up the phone. But it's amazing how much power people have to ruin anything. At the, I gave someone my cell number, and as usual, I added by saying just send me a text because I almost never actually answer the phone.
Yeah,
for so many reasons.
Yeah,
for that reason,
and my phone is set to do not disturb if it's outside of my unless I'm expecting something. It's generally do not disturb if it's not in my phone book and in my contact list. And then what it does make you do is if you have a new client or a new partner or someone that you have to talk to, you very quickly put their phone number into your
into your
contact.
Otherwise, they can't reach
because
you.
It just kind of whitelist it. Because my email is the same way, where I everything that isn't something I know or I haven't responded to in the past goes into a folder that I sometimes get to.
My problem is my doctor uses call blocking, so it's always an unknown caller, and of course I will never answer the phone for an unknown caller.
Yeah.
But at least he leaves messages. I don't really.
So I think I should probably just real quickly point out there is the National Do Not Call Registry,
which does not work. Have you done it?
I did it with landline phones. I haven't tried doing it with a cell phone yet, but it counts. Your mobile phone does count. So if you do receive phone calls from live people,
you are allowed
to tell them. You know, I'm on the do not call registry, so stop calling me.
But here's the point, is these people are not in the United States. And so they just, with impunity, ignore the law. I've been on the do not call list for all my phones since 2015.
Does it feel like it's getting more intense? I mean, I feel
absolutely.
At this point, I'm getting 10 or 12 calls a day that I just look down and I go, no.
I'm trying something called Nomo Robo. I don't know if you guys have tried this. It is $1.99 per line. And it's a little concerning because you have to give it kind of access to your contact list and stuff. But they say we don't take it off your phone, and it does block robocalls. I have it right now on my iPhone, and I haven't gotten a robocall since I put it on there over the weekend. So a lot of people swear by this. You can get it free for landlines, and if you want it on a mobile, it's $1.99 a month per device, and it does seem to work. I was scared off by the reviews on the App Store, but I think that it actually seems to work pretty well.
I just like to use this as an excuse for to cover my timidity at having to suddenly have an interaction with somebody that I was not preparing for.
Yeah, I don't answer the phone at all. Ever. If it's not my wife, I don't answer it.
I'm the person who has to rehearse saying hello. Hello, hello, hello.
I think my... And the worst part is my message even says, I was like, don't even leave a message. I know.
Your message is great. I don't talk on the phone. I love it. I love Alex. I was like,
you should send me a text or you should send me an email. If you don't have email, you should get it.
Yeah. So. You haven't changed that in a while.
No, I haven't. It's classic. I've actually re-recorded it a couple of times when I get new phones or something. I go between services because it's just, I am really not interested. I'm not interested in picking up voicemail. I can't remember the last time I've actually listened to voicemail.
Yeah. Mm. As Patterson in the chat room says,
do you read the voicemail to text instead?
I don't do, no. You text me don't communicate. I just don't care. You know, like if, you know, it's like if my mom calls, I pick up if I saw that she called, I call her back, but I don't care what she left on the message because I'll just talk to her.
Because it's probably not worth listening to because she's going to tell you when you talk to her anyway, right?
Exactly. Like, I'd rather just have a real conversation than listen to someone talk. And then there's lots of rules, you know, to leaving messages. Because I leave messages every once in a while. You have to say your name, then you say the phone number, then you leave the message, then you say the phone number again. And if you follow that, it's much easier for people.
Oh,
to call
I
you
always
back
do because that. Then, yeah.
But a lot of people don't. They'll give you this long droning voicemail and then they leave the message at the end. And if you don't get the phone number all at the very end, then you have to listen to the whole thing again to get back to it. You're like, leave it at the front.
Do you think, Helpless Corgis in our chat room says, I have a feeling robocalls are going away naturally once an older generation of non-techno literates are gone. The reason these are on the upswing is because they're cheap to do. Technology's made it virtually free, just like spam, virtually free to do it. And they're using VoIP, so it's really easy for them to do millions of calls a day. But ultimately, it has to succeed. And do you think that that at some point it'll just so be so worthless that people just stop doing it?
I think there's a lot of things. I think advertising will eventually get there. The idea of interrupting, I think, is something that will slowly. I mean, it might take us 20 years, but I think we'll slowly filter a lot of that stuff out. I mean, my kids, you know, when they see ads on TV, they're perplexed and upset and
what is this?
I don't understand. Like,
give me YouTube.
Keep on
But yeah, you don't have ads on your YouTube because you pay for YouTube Red. Is that why?
They just don't watch anything. They literally, if I can't skip over it, they'll never go back to that video again.
Wow.
You know, like, it's just like they're not interested, and or they'll see ads and you'll see them just immediately skip away to something else. Like, if they don't see the 5-second countdown, they just go to the next thing. You know, like, they're not going to watch 30 seconds of anything for a video, you know? And so it's fun to watch 9 and 10 year olds interact with media because they're so efficient.
The modern world is making us antisocial, isn't it?
I think so.
Social though.
Yeah, but that's not real social. That's pseudo social. That's Facebook social.
I think the problem is that Instagram, social media in its current version of social media, I would say, is kind of empty calories. So we keep eating and we don't get full. You know, like, it's just like you just keep eating and you don't get full. And
right.
By full, I would say feeling related to anyone.
Right.
You know, so you think that you're being connected.
It's pseudo relationship.
It's all like Krispy Kremes. You're just eating a lot of Krispy Kreme in most days. I think that's the challenge.
Maybe we're doing it wrong. Lori and Andy disagree. Maybe we're doing it wrong.
I think Lori's right.
I do agree that it's not the best version of being social, but I think that for example, I just got to spend a couple of days with my first cousin once removed. We had to figure that out, and I'd only ever seen her once in my entire life before that, but we've stayed connected through social media, and that allowed me to have a relationship with someone that I'm related to, but who lives on the other side of the country. So that's what I mean by globally, is that I think I agree that we box ourselves out of the real world that's right in front of us, our friends that live next door or down the street, but we're also opening ourselves to be more social with people outside of our immediate sphere. So
I agree to that. I mean, I think that when we have conversation, I think conversation is the important part. Like, I have a couple uncles and they range from very, very liberal to very, very conservative. And one of our pastimes is, you know, we have a group messenger thing where we sit there and talk about politics. I only see those uncles maybe once every couple of years in person, but I see them every day, you know, in a kind of an ongoing conversation. And it's kind of an enjoyable little thing to do. And I definitely agree with you that there are ways that we're using media to be social. But I think that when we think about looking at people's posts or their tweets or their, you know, other things like that, I think that is where it gets dangerous, where it becomes again, just a lot of empty calories. People spend hours. I have to admit, I didn't drop Facebook. I'm still on Facebook. I check it on my computer and everything else, but I took it off my phone. And oh my! And I think I talked about it a couple of weeks ago. It was just suddenly got, I don't know, I feel like I got a lot of my time back and my sanity back and my battery back. Taking it off the phone, it was all I needed.
Yeah. So long as you understand the transaction, so long as you understand the effects of the narcotic that you're engaging in, I think it's a pretty good trade-off. I mean, I would not describe my social ineptitude as a disability. However, I have often thought of some of this technology that I have around me as if it were a disability, it would be like an assistive device. The ability to have a social interaction with somebody without feeling as though the nervousness I get when I meet someone for the first time, I can have like a micro transaction that I'm very, very comfortable with. And then so many times after having these micro transactions over social media, I have made a whole bunch of friends that are welcome to, who've stayed at my house, who've gone to dinner whenever we're in each other's towns. And I would not necessarily have been the people who are my neighbors. Sometimes I don't know whether to say, hey, I'm going to be staying up watching the Oscars. I'll be making a couple of pizzas. Why don't you come over? Because, okay, now have I obligated them to come over and they don't want to, but they feel, and now will I be obligated to come over to their house and all this other stuff? So it's so long as you understand the transaction that's happening. And like Lori said, there's so many people that I would not have met otherwise that are
now just, again, really good friends of mine. The flip side of that, though, is that there are times where, like, if there's like someone with like a half a million Twitter followers, and this is somebody who is very, very share-y regarding regarding personal details of their life. So I know what their wife's name is. I know what their kids look like. I know that one of the kids has a disability. I know that, you know, you're sort of by having these observations into your life, I think it does plug into the 100,000-year-old social software that's wired into your brain about if I know these details about these people on a regular basis, I must know these people personally. And I don't want to overstate this, but sometimes I can feel myself about to like respond, oh, that's too bad. What are you going to do? Like, oh, wait, no, this is it's not necessary for me to show concern. It's not necessary for me to become involved because I don't know this person. This person doesn't know me. And I'm about to react or respond to this in such a way that this person is at least a casual acquaintance and they're totally not. So as long as you understand the properties of the narcotic, you can go, okay.
Yeah, I think it's the reason I had to take it off the phone is I literally think I have the best Facebook feed ever. You know, like I have, it's wildly diverse.
That's what they want you to think, Alex.
No, I've got almost 5,000 friends. I'm almost to the limit. And I didn't do it the way you're supposed to do it. You know, you're supposed to friend your friends or all that BS. I friended, you know, like if you have a big camera or a dead cat, you know, on your dead cat is a mic. It's a big mic with a fee. It's not really a dead
cat.
Actually,
I friended people with dead cats, and I thought that was good.
Yeah, no. So or a Steadicam or a jib, I'm gonna friend you. You know, and if you, I don't friend you because I'm trying to get anything. I just know you're gonna post things that I'm interested in, and you're gonna post behind the scenes of shows and everything else. And then if you're from Zimbabwe, I'll probably post you, or most of Africa, Zimbabwe, Rwanda, Kenya, I'll friend you as well. And once you start friending people, what happens is it's like this spiraling process where you suddenly are friending lots of people. And so when the Zimbabwean elections happened over the summer, you know, I have 400 friends in Zimbabwe. And so you got to watch all these people that were ZANU-PF and MDC, and they're all arguing. And it was fun, you know? And so I think that for me, it was addicting because I actually felt like I tuned my process. And I'm also very careful about what I click on. You know, like I don't like everything. You know, I'm very careful because I know that whatever I do, if I sit there and watch it, or if I click on it, if I even slow down a little bit, it's gonna change. I'm gonna get lots of those posts. You know, I'm gonna get more of whatever I was clicking on. So I'm very conscious to when I click on something that I'm telling Facebook, I would like to see more of this. You know, and so when, again, like you said, Andy, when you have a very conscious relationship with your social media, it's fun. I just realized that my addiction was too much that, you know, maybe I shouldn't have it in my hand all the time. You know, I shouldn't have the phone having all of those things available.
See, you're making me want to create a new Facebook account. Then I realized, no, I've heard this spiel before.
So great.
I've heard this spiel from everybody with a Facebook account. You're just doing it wrong, Leo. If you just did what I do, you'd love your Facebook account or Twitter account or Instagram account.
No, it's all trash.
That's what I think. That's what I think.
There's also something to consider, though, just not to get off on the same subject of social media for so long, but the younger generations of people, none of us know what that's like. And these are teens and young people who have been born and raised with social media. Yeah. It means something completely different to them than
true.
It does to us.
Yeah, I admit I'm an old guy.
Such a good point.
Yeah.
My kids only chat with each other. Like I don't see them posting stuff. It's just like these constant conversations with friends on mostly Roblox. Yeah. You know, it's like their little process of them talking back and forth. But they seem to be chatter. I don't see them that. Maybe they don't have a lot of accounts yet, so maybe that's it. But they don't seem to post a lot of stuff.
So do you discourage them or encourage them? Do you think that that social is their future?
Yeah, I mean, I think that you do have to make sure that they're doing other things. My kids are pretty active, so they're doing a lot of different stuff. I mean, I probably let them. I don't have this hard rule about how much screen time they have. I do keep an eye on it. They do have to, there's a lot of rules. There's things that have to get done. Their rooms pretty much have to be clean if they're going to use a screen. So their rooms are, you know, impeccable most of the time, which is something.
Do you
I
have a funny little rhyming thing that you make them say?
Sorry.
Please, may
rooms
I be
clean
on Facebook?
Or no screen.
No, it's just like is if their
rooms
homework's
clean,
done,
no
if they're,
screen.
If they're,
I like it.
Rooms, yeah, room, you know, yeah, rooms have to be clean. The homework has to be done. And then usually there's other things like right now they're learning, you know, times tables, and so they have to have a certain, they have to meet a certain, you know, they have to know
multiplication,
the new sets per week. Yeah, multiplication time, you know, multiplication tables.
We have an so they. There's an interesting couple of guys in the studio today who are, have met for the first time. They've been friends for 10 years, more. They met in an AOL chat room playing Yu-Gi-Oh! Remember Yu-Gi-Oh! Cards? And they've stayed friends online this whole time. And they're I guess they're such big geeks, they're both here today. Ezekiel and John. Or did one of you drag the other one and say, oh, here's something, or did you both know about Twit?
Yeah, no, I've been watching since the
TV days. So Ezekiel's been a fan forever. Yeah. All right. And he's making John now, so experience. But that's an example. Actually, that's a really neat example, right, of how you could meet in cyberspace and be friends.
I got my job at Lucasfilm by posting on AOL. Oh,
there you go.
You know, so it was definitely, I mean, and the AOL chat forums, those used to be the forums for technical stuff. And I still have friends that I've only met probably three or four times, but I've known them since the early 90s.
Yeah. Well, I'm just antisocial. Maybe that's just, that's the real truth of the whole thing. Let me take a break. More to come. Our show today brought to you by FreshBooks. The ridiculously easy-to-use cloud accounting software that helps small business owners thrive. And I say that from personal experience because I started using FreshBooks back before Twit when I was just, you know, a freelancer going to Canada once a month to do a call for help up there in Toronto. And I'd have to invoice them at the end of every month for my time, my expenses, all of that. And I hated it doing it. I put it off and, of course, learned a valuable lesson. If you don't send bills, you don't get paid. Amber MacArthur, I was bemoaning my fate one day to Amber MacArthur, and she said, you should try FreshBooks. FreshBooks had just started up in Toronto. This is back 2005, 2006. It was awesome. I was able to make invoices quickly. They did the currency conversion because I was billing them in Canadian dollars. They do any currency in the world. I could take pictures with the FreshBooks app of my expenses. They'd go right into the invoices. If you do time and hours, you can have, they have a little timer on the phone or a timer on the website. It's entirely, thing is, that just the process of that actually was doing my accounting. A lot of small business owners never really know if they're making money until the end of the year when it's tax time. Do we make money? With FreshBooks, you know at any time because you go to your FreshBooks dashboard and there it all is. See, it turns out they're keeping track of invoices. That's accounts receivable. They're keeping track of payments. They're keeping track of expenses. They'll even automatically connect to your bank account and update expenses daily. And now, because they know all that, they're doing, don't tell anybody this, real double entry bookkeeping of your stuff. So you can do reports. Your accountant or your tax preparer will love, like general ledger and trial balance. That's all automatic. You don't have to know what that means, though. All you have to do is make invoices. You could share those reports, though, and with people who do understand it, and that's now you're a real business. They add features all the time because it's a web app that, for instance, you can create proposals now with rich text content and images. You can accept e-signatures. And this, you don't have to sign up for any special stuff. This all comes with FreshBooks. Same thing with credit cards. Your invoice has a pay me button, and your clients can pay you online with credit cards, but you don't have to do anything. It just happens. It just works. FreshBooks is amazing. You will get paid on average twice as fast, and you won't be in mystery about whether you're making money, how you're doing. They've got bulk actions. They've got easy ways to delete businesses under your account. If there's anything you don't understand, they've got amazing support and now Learning Hub videos. It is the way to keep your business running. And the app makes it so much easier. Join the 24 million people now who use FreshBooks to painlessly send invoices, track time to capture expenses, to do business without having to worry about the stuff you don't like, the paperwork. Try FreshBooks free for 30 days. Yes, free for 30 days at our special address, freshbooks.com/MacBreak. This is, now's the time to do this. Get it started. Start the new year right. Freshbooks.com/MacBreak. You will thank me when tax time comes around. And don't forget to put MacBreak Weekly in the How Did You Hear About Us section. Freshbooks.com/MacBreak. Apple has fixed the bagel. There were some complaints about the Apple bagel emoji. This is the before. It looks like it's made out of foam rubber. Perfectly flawless. This is the app after. This will be, now that looks like a bagel you'd want to eat, doesn't it?
It's nice and fluffy.
It's making me hungry. It's got cream cheese smeared on it.
I feel like we need Renee on this.
Yes, because he says topic. Montreal is the only true bagel.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't mean to be rude, but I didn't realize there was a difference. But I'm from California. Our bagels suck. So as far as I know, bagels are all the same.
Well, they ruined, you know, you go somewhere like Noah's, you assume you're getting a real New York bagel. You're not. Even in New York, they've ruined the bagel because they're making them puffy and fluffy and the holes are getting smaller. But a real bagel is boiled first and baked and the holes are tiny. Anyway, apparently Montreal's the last great bagel. I have to say, looking at the bagel emojis, I'm definitely not having a Microsoft bagel. That looks like what, a donut? What is that? Google's not so bad. At least it's got sesame seeds on it. Samsung's toasted. And what the hell is this? Twitter.
That looks like a macaron.
It looks like a baked apple or something. What the hell is that, Twitter? That ain't no bagel. It's red. That's the problem.
And the thing is these were the other options. And somehow Apple was like taken to task over
of all
theirs,
people.
Which. The other one still looked better than all the other options. And so, but I applaud them for reacting so quickly.
People care about their bagels. I don't think Apple's was that bad in hindsight, not compared to Twitter. But the new one is really too good.
Bagel does look a little bit more like a fluffy Noah's bagel, though.
Yes. So, no, you're right. See how small that hole is? Yeah.
Yeah.
But the schmear makes a difference, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I really can't be a judge of a good bagel versus not a good bagel because I don't really know what that tastes like. But where's the lox? I think there needs to be a bagel and lox in there.
Lox or a little white fish.
Start pushing.
Renee Ritchie does weigh in on Twitter. He says, it's still round bread, not a bagel.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, and he... he says he wants to file a radar with Apple fixing it. It says it's still bad. He says this is what a bagel should look like. Well, I admit that while that
it
looks
won't make you fail a drug test because of the poppy seeds.
Then it's not a bagel.
Yeah.
That is those bagels look a little wizened, to be honest with you.
According to Renee, that's what a bagel looks like.
Yeah,
so...
well so there you go. I guess it's it's Montreal like style bagel.
You know, maybe like, I'll be able to see Renee in a couple of weeks. And if that does happen, I'm going to make him bring me some of these Montreal bagels so that I can decide for myself if they're as good as he says they are.
I think you're right, Laura. I think there's a put up or I feel as though there should be a put up or shut up factor. If someone insists, oh, that's not pizza, this is pizza, or oh, no, that's not a marinara sauce. It's like, fine. But once you pass 4.2 minutes in your harangue, you're obligated to show me, quote, what a real marinara sauce, unquote, or what a real bagel is like. it sounds silly, and maybe in the case of the bagels, it is kind of silly, but it does remind us how important emojis have become. Because it's not just what people like, it's how people communicate with each other. And so when people feel as though they are trying to communicate using a symbol that doesn't represent them or doesn't represent how they define a certain thing, that becomes like the international wrong way of doing stuff. Ace Tilton Ratcliffe, a disabled woman that I follow on Twitter, I really recommend people follow her Twitter. She's a Mortuary Report, MortuaryReport, tweeted last night about this. That's why I wanted, that's what this this is a
really cool to me, retweeting a tweet from the Mojopedia talking about exactly this issue, that, if Apple has received complaints and they've replaced the bagel emoji with a new design that includes cream cheese. And she replied saying, "We've revamped the bagel emoji, but still don't have disabled human emojis, even though disabled humans make up 20% of the population, almost 60 million people." And it's true that Apple will be including them in the next iteration, and a lot of the delay is probably because of the lack of the International Emoji Committee has been slow in creating standards for these emojis. But it goes to show that even though it might sound silly to talk about a bagel, when you talk about if you have people emojis and people and not every person is being represented there, it becomes a more important issue. It becomes part of the language that is not representing all of humanity out there. So I'm glad that she tweeted that just to remind everybody of the stakes of emojis sometimes.
Apple does succeed amazingly with its iOS versions. 12.1 is in beta right now, and it'll be out sometime in the future. But 53% of all iPhone or iOS devices introduced in the last 4 years are using iOS 12. That is an amazing, and 50% of all devices are using iOS 12. That is an amazing success rate, especially when you compare it with Google's success rate with Oreo. Pi, the latest version of Android, which came out before iOS 12 and is currently, according to Android.com, on 0.1% of all. Android phones.
Well, I think that's woo-woo numbers. I don't think that it tells the real story. Remember that you're talking about if Android P were available, were compatible at launch with the same number of handsets and devices as iOS was, I think you would see those 50% numbers. Remember that has to go under the old method. It has to go through carriers and has to go through handset makers to reach the end user. So right now we're pretty much just talking about owners of Pixel phones and the Essential phone, I think, is the only one that's compatible phone. Right now. Yeah. But the other thing is that Google has it's the idea of an update to the operating system means something different on Android than it does on iOS, because so many features, even like core operating system sort of stuff, gets updated not through a full update to the operating system, but through an update to like Google Play services, which is available to every phone that can access the Google Play Store. So you can be running like Android O and still have essentially Android P features just by the virtue of the fact that you've updated this. And the other thing is that remember that you don't necessarily have to wait a year for an updated calendar app or for an updated camera app, because these things can be updated individually as things go. So it's very, very true that that iOS will always have this huge advantage, and it's a very, very real advantage, but it goes beyond simply saying, oh, well, look, Android P only has 0.1% installation base. It's not a fake number, but I always feel like I have to jump in and clarify why it's not the same sort of problem as it would be if Apple were only imagine if everybody had the ability to update to the very latest version of iOS on the day it was released, and they were just said, nah.
Actually, the number that would be comparing would be comparable would be what percentage of Google phones, Pixel phones, are running Android Pi, because basically you're saying 50% of all the phones made by Apple are running the latest operating system. So what percentage of phones made by Google are running? And I don't have that number.
That would be a more realistic comparison. Sure. Yeah.
However, I mean, even with Oreo, which has been out for a year, it's only less than 20% of all phones are running Oreo. So it's problematic for Android because there is such a fragmentation and there's security issues with anything that's too old.
But the other factor is that when you're talking about Android devices, you're also talking about my bike computer. which is running Android 3.
And my bike computer as well. That's right. Yeah.
And you're running a whole bunch of like blister pack phones that cost like $5 that aren't technically capable. So again, it's important to this number shouldn't be downplayed because it is a real number, but Android is a different ecosystem.
Right. Apple Music is now getting some better lyrics. Amazon's always had very nice lyrics. When you listen to a song on one of the Echo shows, for instance, you get lyrics, and they're really good. Apple's Music lyrics are now going to be provided by Genius, which is the king of the hill when it comes to lyric databases.
You know, there's an app that I'm kind of surprised doesn't exist. I was watching, again, I watch my kids do media, but I was watching my daughter trying to figure out how to sing to a song. And I'm kind of surprised that maybe there is an app that I just don't know about, that I couldn't find it, that you can see the lyrics, but you can, it's kind of like karaoke, but it kind of mixes it in with the song. So you can hear your voice with the song. It doesn't, you know, the, you know, so you can kind of listen to it as well as sing to it. You know, it's
isn't
kind of an interesting.
Isn't that the app SingStar? Am I wrong?
Is that what it does?
I can't remember. It's been a while since I've tried, but I think that's what it is. It's like karaoke, but you can use it on your phone, I believe. And
you just kind of listen to it yourself.
I think you do have to use the songs that they provide, though. I don't think you can just, you know, I just want to listen to, you know.
That's what it seemed like. Like, you know, it was one of those things that it seemed like it would be something that would be fun, you know, and it's not hard. It is hard technically, but it's not,
Smule used to have Sing, and I think they killed that, but now they've got something that lets you sing along. Like, here is, I don't know if I want to hear this, but here's a guy singing along with Jasmine.
I love that he's cosplaying
and he's actually got a little fez on and a vest.
Oh, man. Oh, that actually, I thought that was a man bun, so now I think that, no, now I think more highly of him than it's a fez.
So,
but it's,
I wonder if he's seeing the lyrics. Huh?
I think it's just the songs that they provide for that, though. I don't think you can just like listen to something and have it kind of mixed in. Well, it just seemed like it would be, if someone's listening, it seems like it would be, I don't know. I would never use it, but I think that when I looked at it and looked at how my daughter was using it, I was like, I think that she would enjoy that. But I, you know, then I went on to something else, you know, taking out, for instance, even the voice is usually centered. And so usually you can,
it's not so hard to take it out. Yeah.
Do a polarity shift and just pull the voice right out. You'll hear like a little echo of it, but I had a karaoke machine. I was a DJ a long time ago at weddings. And so having a karaoke machine was useful.
I used to do it when we had turntables. You flip the polarity on the cartridge. Yeah. It would work.
I just had a button. You know, so I just push a button and it was like,
I think the idea is, you're canceling the left and the right out by flipping the polarity, and so the thing that
anything
matches,
in the center, anything that was mixed in the center, would cancel itself out, and so you'd lose a little bit of the song, but you'd get most of it, and someone could just sing over top of it. It was quite nice.
Here's a comparison, maybe that is more germane between Apple and Android. The App Store generated 93% more revenue than Google Play in the third quarter. This is according to Sensor Tower.
And I first misread that. It's not 93% of the revenue. It's just almost twice.
Almost twice the revenue.
They could have said it produced almost twice.
That would have been a better headline, wouldn't it?
Yeah. It would have been more accurate.
But that's not an insignificant amount of money. $18.2 billion in Q3 2018 from the App Store. $18.2 billion. Google Play Store, $6.2 billion. It's not, the total amount is a lot, one way or the other.
It's not bad for a hobby.
Jeez. Yeah.
Well, the great thing about modern journalism is that we can produce a think piece on any point of view. If I had an Android blog, I would say new statistics prove that an iPhone is more than twice as expensive to operate month after month than an Android phone.
There's a lot of money in apps, no matter how you look at it.
Have you gotten into kind of I just can't do any more subscriptions. You know, I reached some point where I deleted like huge amounts of, I suddenly realized how many subscriptions I had done and I deleted them, and now I'm just won't do it. You know, like I just, and I think that there was this push to buy stuff, and then there was a push to do subscriptions. And I think now I just want to buy the app.
Well, I agree. I wish more games were like that. But most of the games that are high revenue games are games with in-app purchases for items like Fortnite, right? Where the number one game in terms of revenue, iOS and Android for Q3 2018, I've never even heard of. It's called Honor of Kings. It's from Tencent, which is a big publisher of these style games. Then Monster Strike, Fate Grand Order. I've not heard of any of these. Lineage M. Oh, there's one I've heard of. Pokemon Go is number 5. Candy Crush Saga, number 6. Fantasy Westward Journey, DBZ Dokken Battle, Fortnite, number 9. Clash of Clans, number 10. So this list gets shooken up pretty regularly. Clash of Clans, Fortnite used to be on top.
I'm just amazed that I don't play Fortnite at all. And I'm just amazed, though, that there's now football players out there doing. I was like, what are they doing? And they're like, and even the announcers are like, yeah, that's not a very good Fortnite dance. And
right.
It's like, wow, that's amazing.
That's making it difficult for me to get into mobile gaming. I just I'll see a game that looks kind of interesting and I'm about to get it. And then I see that, oh, it's free with in-app purchases. And it makes me think, how much fun am I allowed to have with this before I have to cough up like another $5 or $10? I did buy the Nintendo Mini, and I buy these consoles when they come out because it's the only way that I can get like cool if old arcade. I know that I'm like $80 up front, but then nothing ever again. And that's a feature to me.
You have to give props to game developers that are making these free with in-app purchase games. They've gotten so much better at giving you a good quality game that doesn't cost money and then presenting you with options to buy.
And I always look in the reviews because reviewers will almost always say, oh, this game was pretty fun even though I didn't have to buy anything. Or don't bother because it's going to cost you $200 to have any fun at all.
Yeah, and there's been when the free to play games first came out, you really did feel like you couldn't play more than a half an hour of a game, right, or maybe even a day or a couple hours worth of a game before you felt compelled to either pay or stop playing. And a lot of these games have figured out a way to let you engage in it and play it for hours at a time, and then present you with an option of if you want to enhance your gameplay, here's these things that you could buy, or they'll have events where they're timed events, and in order to kind of like maximize the amount of time you have to get through the event, you can pay some extra money to kind of help you get through it. I think those are sort of brilliant ways to navigate the free-to-play in-app purchase sort of game, which it really is the dominant game on mobile devices, and no game developer is going to just say, well, we're just not going to do that, because they know they're going to make a lot of money at it. But if you can figure out a way to balance good gameplay, you're going to get the players are going to want to spend money. They're going to feel good that they got to play as much as they did and want to continue to spend there.
Fortnite's a perfect example because you can play Fortnite till the cows come home without spending any money. The game mechanics are not affected by it. Your ability to win is not affected by it. It's purely dance moves and costumes, decorative stuff.
And
it makes millions.
When people get excited about being able to play Fortnite, they're more willing to spend large amounts of money because they feel good about the game.
They feel good about it. They don't feel like they've been manipulated into it. Yeah,
exactly.
That's why I stopped playing Simpsons Tapped Out. I felt like I had to buy donuts. Had to. Actually, Pokemon Go is the same way. You can play that game without spending a penny, but you might be incented to buy things.
And then of course you have the other side. Like my favorite game. I know I get into ruts, but I still play Field Runners. And I think that poor Subatomic Studios. I don't think that they're around anymore.
Thing in a while, have they?
Well, the website hasn't been updated since January of 2017. I think that things didn't. And if you click on their headline, you end up on some other page. Anyway, so I think that if they are, they should contact me because. It's still great. If you haven't played Field Runners, it's amazing.
It's the awesomest game.
It's just, I play it when I fly. There's this time between when you take off and when they serve the meal. And it's like a no man's land. You can't really put your computer up. You don't know when they're going to come. And so that's when I play a round or two of Field Runners. And I just play the same level over and over again until I get to a point where I'm like, I can't do this anymore.
The copyright on the page is 2011.
Well, the last posting was on 2017, I think, of January 2017.
And I clicked the About button and I get Entertainment Today Insider News.
I know. I was like, what?
What? This is basically an ad, I think.
Yeah. I think what happened was for me, I never played Field Runner Attack. And I think that I might have been a lot of folks because it required you to connect with somebody else. And I just was playing on a plane.
Well,
it was
guys, really hard if to you're, get look, connected. Here's the picture of all these guys and gals at the Subatomic Studio. They're in Cambridge, Massachusetts. If you're listening to this show, please contact Alex Lindsay. He doesn't take phone calls.
Let me know.
But text him.
You can find him on Twitter.
Or email him or find him on Twitter.
I love you guys. I love your game.
I love you, man.
It takes me a long time to go from one. I did try Fortnite. I went out and then I got killed immediately. And I was like, I don't like this game.
It looks like their last tweet was February 2017. And then they just disappeared into a fourth dimensional fold and have never been seen again. That is weird, isn't it, when that kind of thing
happens? It's like a one-hit wonder band, and you wonder what happened to them, where they are now, and can you get the band back together for one gig?
There's probably a whole behind the music of behind the app. That's what they
that
really
would be a great show.
Of the apps.
Why doesn't Apple do that?
I know.
You might have said that offhandedly, but if I found out that there was a show, whether it was just some person doing it on YouTube or whether it was on Hulu, where you did an entire like 12-episode season of just looking for apps that are good, but they haven't been updated for like at least 4 years, and it looks as though their social media is non-existent, their URL now goes to like someone else. Find out what happened to that app, why they stopped doing it. I know that all of it will be, well, we basically realized that we'd be paying ourselves about 12 cents an hour with all the effort we put in and all the money that it made, and we decided to just do better things with our Tuesday afternoons. But I would watch that show. I would watch that hey, where are they now sort of
behind
anthology series of.
Maybe this is Apple's plan because, according to CNBC, they don't want to charge for all that $1 billion worth of original content they're creating. This was a shock when I read this. They're planning to mix free original content with subscription channels to existing digital video services on the TV app. In other words, the $1 billion you're spending on original content is just a come on.
It's just window dressing.
It's just window dressing to get what, an Apple TV or an iOS device?
I wish I had a company that was so big that I could spend $1 billion on Lost Leader.
Wow. It's marketing. I mean, they've got Oprah doing this. They've got everybody.
You don't need an Apple Music subscription even. It's literally just free as long as you have a device.
Well, no one knows.
This is the rumor, yes. If you have a device,
it does seem surprising.
Well, but in some ways not, because they're really pushing that TV app, right?
I will say that if they simply bundled it with music, it would be, you know, it wouldn't be necessarily free. It'd be free to all those people that already have music, but it really puts a lot of pressure on Spotify, you know, because now it's like, oh, I sign up for Apple Music, I get all these shows as well. Instead of, you know, that would put an immense amount of pressure on Spotify if Apple starts spending $1 billion and just bundled the media together. So that could be another option.
Owners of this is, again, according to sources, CNBC, anonymous sources, the owners of Apple devices such as the iPhone, iPad, and Apple TV will find the still-in-the-works service in the pre-installed TV application. The product will include Apple-owned content, which will be free to Apple device owners, and subscription channels. They likened it to Amazon's Prime Video app, which includes free stuff for Amazon's Prime subscribers and then paid stuff for those who, you know, want to buy additional stuff.
Customers, that was fairly simple for me too. I mean, as a Prime member, it just suddenly I had all these shows that I didn't know I had before. You know, it's not like I subscribed to something to get them. I already had it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Apple has 24 original shows in production and development.
I think it does point to if the TV app looks rather fallow and unimportant, I think they've parked that on the launch screen for something that they know is coming later. I often forget completely that I've got all this free TV content with Amazon Prime because I'm just not conditioned into having the Amazon TV, Amazon video app on all my devices. And so when I complain that, oh boy, why can't I get Archer? Why can't I get this other TV show that's not on Hulu? It's like, I forgot completely that I've been paying for this TV content and now paying a surprising amount of money for this TV content. I still think that Amazon Prime costs $80 or $90 until I get the annual bill and find out that, no, you're about paying 10 bucks a month for it. And it's worth it. But it's amazing I'm paying so much for a service and forgetting all the features that I get with it beyond getting free second-day delivery.
Well, and I wonder whether Apple's play is that, hey, we're building this great garden where you as, Time Warner or as other studios can grow your vegetables. You know, like we're not trying to replace you. Netflix is basically like, we're going to keep doing this with this contract with you until we totally replace you and drown you. You know, like they're right. they're not Netflix is not, there's 700 shows and 80 movies in production this, that are going to be released over the next year. I mean, they are replacing Hollywood. And the reality is their content's good enough to do that most of the time. I think Apple might be doing more of a, we're going to create big shiny things to bring people to this location, but then they want to buy subscriptions from you and try to kind of, that might be a unique angle over what Netflix and arguably what Amazon.
And the other thing that they have the ability to say, touching on something we just finished talking about, is they can demonstrate that people on iOS buy things. They don't, they've got money, they spend money much more than they do on Android devices. And so if they say that if you include this pack part of the package in with a free for Apple users, and you have links below of, hey, press this button right now and we'll let you have another two seasons of this, they will probably buy another two seasons of it.
Of course, part of the problem Apple has is they don't want anything too edgy, sexy, political, or religious. Wall Street Journal's headline in this regard: no sex please, we're Apple. And they apparently killed the Dr. Dre biopic Vital Signs.
I was amazed when they talked about that years ago. I was just like, they're really doing that? Apple is doing that? I didn't understand. But I think there's a pretty big model. I mean, Pixar's a pretty big world.
Yeah.
I don't think that necessarily.
There's lots of stuff they could do. Although, but when apparently there's a show that they're producing that sounded a little edgy. M. Night Shyamalan has a new series on there, and they asked him to remove. It's about a couple that's lost their child, I think, and they asked them to remove all the crucifixes in the couple's house because they didn't want any religious content. Mm. So they're that. I mean, they're being – and I, it's Apple. That doesn't surprise me. They don't want to be edgy. They don't want to be controversial.
I'm keen to see a few years after this really launches for real – conversations with people who were working with Apple and how bad it was to be focusing on telling a great story, and then you find out that there's a poster for a rock and roll band in the kids' room. If it were just rock or just roll, we'd be cool with it. But if you could change it to like an orange juice poster, like
it'd be so much better.
Really, people love micromanagement. They can't get enough of it.
I know we had this conversation a couple of weeks ago, that is par for the course. I mean, that is Hollywood.
Yeah.
Is some producer asking for some cockamamie thing that is what happens all the time.
One last story, and then we're going to take a break for our picks of the week. And the story is a sad one, of course. Paul Allen, who was co-founder of Microsoft, worth about $5 billion. He owned the Seattle Seahawks, a Portland Trailblazers. He owned at one time Tech TV, has passed away at the age of 65. He had left Microsoft in 82. Because he had Hodgkin's, it went into remission, and he was able to lead a completely normal life. But apparently, non-Hodgkin's lymphoma resurged last year. He announced that they had restarted treatment for the cancer just 2 weeks ago, and he's now passed away. So a lot of people with a lot of tributes, especially in the Seattle area, where he was beloved because of his generosity. His love of sports, his love of the arts. He built that amazing experience music project. Now it's called Mopop, which is an amazing museum in Seattle. If you haven't seen it, the Frank Gehry building is designed to look like a melted guitar. He was a huge Jimi Hendrix fan. He was worth more than $20 billion. $20 billion. Gave $2 billion to philanthropies, and took Bill Gates' giving pledge, a commitment to give away the majority of his wealth in 2018.
Yeah.
He gave away a lot of his wealth running Tech TV into the, but it wasn't his fault. That was why he sold it in 2004.
He also was part of the team that won the X Prize for the first commercial flight into space.
Right.
So that was I was actually there at the launch, and boy, you never saw a man so happy.
That's neat.
As watching this thing launch and watching it come back again. Yeah. What an interesting life he led. Not to cast aspersions against other billionaires, but it gives an outsider like me pleasure to see that not only did he lead a life of adventure, but also he led a life of philanthropy. I have a great deal of respect for the company he built and the life he led. It was a sad piece of news.
Yep. 65 years old.
Too early.
Yeah, as somebody who's nearing that age, definitely too early. Let's take a break and come back in just a minute with your picks. Lady and gentlemen, prepare your picks. But first, a word. I got a pick for you from LastPass. LastPass is my pick for your password vault. If you are using passwords, and we all do nowadays, you've got to memorize dozens, hundreds of them. You may be tempted to do things people do, like use the same password over and over, make your password easy to memorize by making it your dog's name and your son's birthday. These are all bad ideas. And if your employees are doing it in your business, they could be disaster for your business. That's why we use LastPass Enterprise. And as a benefit of employment, give a copy of LastPass to every employee. We want you to protect your passwords, especially when there are passwords. LastPass Enterprise makes password sharing convenient for employees, but keeping access to corporate data secure. You can completely customize access, including the ability to set master password requirements. You can enable password resets, restrict access as needed. Over 100 policies. Security reports, you could get shared folders. We use those. For instance, the ops team has a folder, the accounting team has a folder. So it's very easy to share passwords with the people who need access and keep it from the people who don't. I use it so much that I put everything in it, including SSH keys, passports, driver's license. All our business information is in there. If you want, you can turn on require two-factor authentication. That's what we do. With the LastPass Authenticator app, it's really easy. It's just a button, a verification button, a notification that pops up on the employee's phone that they just push and says, yes, that was me, which I think is important. You got to make this stuff convenient for your employees, or they'll start doing things like writing passwords on Post-it notes and putting them on the screen. But with a multi-factor authentication, even that wouldn't be enough for a bad guy. LastPass password generator, I use it all the time, make unique random passwords. And, of course, you don't have to remember it because it's stored in your LastPass vault. By the way, on iOS 12 now, autofill on your phone and tablet, which means when you install new apps, it just fills it in. I love that feature. It's also an Android. Just think that's so cool. Autofill, another thing that makes it easy to keep long, strong passwords. And your data is always safe, encrypted and decrypted only at the device level. Data in the vault always kept secret, even from LastPass. And if you use Active Directory in your business, employees can log into LastPass with their Active Directory credentials, which really means they only have to remember one password and for access to everything. We love LastPass. LastPass Premium for personal use. LastPass Families, it's what I use at home for our entire family. LastPass Teams for small businesses. And, of course, LastPass Enterprise, that's what we use. More than 16 million people and 43,000 businesses trust LastPass, the number one most preferred password manager. Find out more. Go to LastPass.com/twit. It's the first app I install whenever I get a new device. I love it. LastPass.com/twit. Andy Yannotko, time for a pick of the week.
My pick of the week is a movie this week that I found on Hulu, a documentary, and absolutely loved. I loved it so much I bought the Blu-ray as soon as the movie was over. It's called Strad Style. And I don't want to, I won't give things away. I will only give you here is the pitch for the movie. You have this guy who lives in rural Ohio. I mean, rural with a capital R. And he gets to know an international concert violinist sort of on Facebook, saying, oh, I make guitars and I make violins and I can make a violin for you. And the international concert violinist says in response, kind of half jokingly, well, why don't you make me a violin? Well, how about the canon, Il Canone, this legendary violin with an amazing loud sound that Paganini used to play. And he said, sure, I can make you a copy of that. Sure, no problem. And he doesn't have like a workshop. He's doing stuff like on his sofa. He's using tools and clamps from Harbor Freight. And you don't really know if he's just a BS artist or whether he's kind of like a genius sort of person who's just a talented like instrument maker who doesn't need a fancy shop. And that this is sort of a mystery that I don't want to sort of reveal how things happen. But it's an amazing story, not only about the making of this attempt to make this violin, and if he'll make it as promised for this concert that this guy is going to be performing, but also of a creative person and the sort of life he leads. Very, very interesting. It's not exploitative. It really gets into the soul of an individual, no matter what he's doing. And like I said, I loved it so much that I was so grateful to have found it. And then again, it was worth me immediately finding out where I could get a copy of the Blu-ray and then buying it.
This looks fascinating. I love documentaries.
High recommended.
Style. A hot doc. All right. Thank you for the pick. Lori Gill, what do you got for us today?
So my pick is old and new all at the same time. It's the Libertone Zip, which is a wireless Bluetooth speaker. Mm-hmm. They just recently updated to support AirPlay 2. So I don't mean a new speaker that's coming soon, because they do have the Zip 2 that's coming soon. I mean the current Zip, the one that anybody who bought the Zip has in their house, with an update, it now supports AirPlay 2. And I'm all in on this AirPlay support with speakers. I have two HomePods. I have a Sonos Beam. Now I can add Libertone Zip to my collection of music that plays all over the place. It's a really good quality portable speaker.
It's cute, probably, too.
It's cute, yeah. And it's probably the best quality in terms of the fact that it's intended to be portable. So it's intended to be used outside and taken with you to parks and picnics and things like that. So it's got a really, really great sound. And AirPlay 2 compatibility to me is like a really great thing that I look forward to more and more speakers being able to have. And a lot of companies have pledged support and still not come through. So Libertone is the next in line of companies who have pledged support for AirPlay, and it's finally available now. So if anybody already has a Zip in their house and they didn't know it, just make sure that you update the app, and then the app will update the speaker, and then the speaker will be AirPlay 2 compatible. And if you don't, you can actually buy the Zip 2. It's not out yet, but I think it's coming late October or early November. So you can just get the Zip 2, and it comes with AirPlay 2 automatically.
Nice. Good choice. Thank you, Lori Gill. Thank you for being here, too. We really appreciate
it. Thank you.
I love being time out here from your busy day. Alex Lindsay, who also has a busy day, but I bet he has a pick of the week as well.
I do. So one of the things I just found myself using a lot, and I thought I couldn't believe that I hadn't recommended it all, but I did the little search on MBW Picks. And have you used Taiyasu Sketches? I don't know if I'm saying it correctly.
Taiyasui.
Taiyasui Sketches.
Taiyasui. Have you used that? No, I never heard of it.
It's a great little sketch. It's a great sketch app. It's available on the Mac. It's also available on the iPad. And I realize this is what I'm using most of the time. So I have the pro version, and if I'm sketching something out that I actually want it to look like something, this is what I end up kind of pulling out. And I just find that the simplicity as well as the tools, are really nice. There's lots of great drawing tools on the iPad. It's kind of an amazing environment for sketching. But I find this one, there's something about it that is just the right mix of clean and complexity that I definitely enjoy when I'm putting together concept ideas for whatever we're working on. Mine is less artistic probably and more detailed around trying to just visualize something that I need someone else to make a better version of. But I realized that this is one that I was using. I had to recommend it because I've been using it for years now, I think. So anyway, it's a really good sketch app if you're still not happy with the ones that you already have. And it's nice. I don't think it's very expensive to buy, and I don't think the pro version is that expensive.
I'm looking at it on a site called SetApp. I guess you buy SetApp and you get a bunch of other apps, including Taiyasui. Are there other ways to get Taiyasui without doing?
Yeah, I just bought it. I primarily use it on my iPad. I just bought it in the App Store.
I just did it. So Google, that I think, so this is what yeah, I came that's, up with.
Yeah, that's the there's an app for the Mac as well. So I think that might be what that is. But you can just buy it as an app on the App Store as well.
Nice.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I have SetApp and it's actually pretty amazing. Just wanted to point that out. Okay. It's basically like Netflix for apps on your Mac. Got so it. It's pretty awesome.
Oh, I should check it out. So yeah. Taiyasui at Taiyasui, TAYASUI.com has a bunch of other stuff, including Doodle Book, Taiyasui Sketches Mac, Taiyasui Color. So there are a bunch of different apps and you can find them all. But you're recommending Sketches? What are you recommending?
That's the one. Sketches, yeah. Sketches is the one that I use a lot. Now that I see that there's a bunch of other ones, I'm like, oh, I probably should have looked at those too. But that's the one I use, and it's actually the one my daughter uses a lot as well. She's got it on her iPad.
Nice.
She this is the one that she sketches a lot on too.
Very nice. I wish I could draw. Maybe I could if I had an iPad Pro.
Anyone can draw. It's just being able to draw well.
No, no. It's all about losing any contact with the desire to draw well and just drawing.
Oh, yeah.
Honest to God,
that's my problem.
As soon as you forget that
that's
you're
what
supposed
I mean, but
to make
I
it
wish I
look-
could draw. I mean, I wish I could draw well.
We have to somehow get. I've been trying to persuade one of my old friends, a guy named Ian McCaig, to come do a class. You know, and we started trying to do a video about it. He's the character designer for Star Wars, and he is one of the most amazing artists that I've worked with. There's a lot of amazing artists at Lucasfilm and ILM, but he is. He's so passionate about teaching people how to do it. He gave us in the Pixel Core years ago, like these 10 steps on how to draw. And it was like how to understand weight, how to understand shading, and just give you this little thing to play with. And we've been trying to get him to re-record it. But literally you get through it and you're twice as good.
That wouldn't be hard.
But I mean, it's just like
twice nothing ain't much.
But I've seen him take someone like he had someone I think intern for him for like a month, and he lives up in Victoria. I think it was a month that he had them draw every day with him, and it was like it was miraculous. All right. So we're trying to figure out a way to.
I just feel like I have a oven mitt for a hand. And I draw. Like,
It turns out it's just. I slowly get better. I don't do enough of it, but it turns out you just have to do a lot of it.
The tools. I got all sorts of tools.
There's a page from a Robert Crumb sketchbook that I used to have like printed out and like pinned up in my old office, where beautifully drawn and beautifully lettered by Robert Crumb. It was a note to himself saying, "Wish you could draw better, then get to work."
He could draw very well. Or did anyway. Thank you, Andy Iannacco. Check out Andy's work at his website, Iannatko.
Broken for now, but I'll fix it.
It's broken but fixable. Then listen to him on the radio, Boston Public Radio, WGBH, every week.
That works because I'm not responsible for running it.
It can't break. There it is. Improve your drawing ability. Then get to work. Nice. I want to print that out and frame it.
Yes.
And still I won't draw. Lori Gill, we love you. Thank you for being here. Come back anytime. Deputy Managing Editor at iMore.com, Appaholic. And I can tell you had a show the other night because you're hoarse. Were you singing your heart out?
I actually got sick and I've been overcoming a cold. So it's like this time it's not because of the singing, though I do have a show coming up. But
tell us about your show.
Our next show is going to be on October 26th at AVFW Hall in one of our small suburban towns with just some other local bands. It's a Halloween show.
You ain't seen rock and roll until you've seen it at the VFW. that's where all the best rock and roll happens.
That's what I'm saying.
I've always said that. That's where the original acid tests happened. No, you got to go there. Appaholic on Twitter, APPAHOLIK. Thank you, Lori. And thank Alex you. Lindsay, he's at the Pixel Corps. If you follow Alex on his Twitter account, you may hear about wonderful things. Alexlindsay on the Twitter.
And I'm speaking at NAB East tomorrow as part of a panel. And we're just a bunch of really smart guys. I'm not sure how I ended up in the mix, but there's guys from LinkedIn and Cisco and Microsoft and Facebook. We're all going to talk about live streaming best practices, and you'll probably get some behind the scenes stories. So anyway, we're speaking tomorrow together at NAB East. And then also we're still doing Patreon, and this will be a busy week at the second half of this week. So if you're interested, come join me on Patreon, the Pixel Corps, Patreon.com/Pixel Corps.
Nice. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. We do Mac Break Weekly every Tuesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1800 UTC. You can watch us make it live at twit.tv/live or email tickets at twit.tv if you're going to be in the Northern California area, and you can come by and watch us. You can watch us live. You can also get on-demand audio and video of the show. Downloads are available at twit.tv/MBW. Or subscribe in your favorite podcast application. We have details on how to do that at twit.tv/subscribe. Thank you all for being here. We'll see you next time. But now, you better get back to work because break time is over. Yeah.